Now it's time for the workshop readout. We'll have Willie Brown up here and Sean Nealon. Clicker, take care.
So yesterday afternoon, we had a series of workshops focusing on two different areas. One was internal obstacles to an effective obsolescence management program and external obstacles. For those of you who were not in the workshops, you really missed a great opportunity to have discussions, cross conversations. You know, from my perspective as a facilitator, it was the easiest time I've ever had. I participated in a lot of different settings where you're supposed to have this interchange of communication, information, and it's kind of like pulling teeth. But yesterday it was really great. It was truly outstanding. So for those who didn't make it this year, definitely plan on attending next year the workshops, because you're missing a lot of good information, interchange, and opportunities to get a little bit more in-depth in your conversations with those who are at the conference. So basically, our goal was to identify the obstacles that people are facing, some of the short-term and long-term solutions to that. So based on the conversations, one of the things we came up with was a mission statement, which is basically to raise the awareness with all stakeholders of the impact of unmanaged obsolescence. And when we say all stakeholders, we mean your management, your team, your suppliers, your customers. Because one of the things that came out of the conversation yesterday was that there is a need to educate everyone, and there's a need to raise their awareness. And the fact that obsolescence occurs, the goal is really to have a means of managing that obsolescence, because you will not be able to prevent it. I think someone has a slide that was talking about, you know, dealing with the inevitable, and obsolescence is inevitable. Also in that, it was to basically educate all stakeholders to form, and I think this was mentioned before, a cross-disciplinary team to address obsolescence, and really to have a documented process for how you handle obsolescence. And that documented process is a living, breathing document that changes as your team changes as your needs and goals of your customers change. So we really need to have the process that you handle, process that you use, documented, so as you get new team members, they have a basis for working. So some of the obstacles that were identified, as I mentioned before, was lack of education of what is obsolescence and the impact on it. And this was just discussed before, communications within the team, within the groups, awareness of the PCNs and the need to monitor the PCNs, forecasting, and the ability to stick with it. And I think the basic thing for this one was, how do I convince others that this forecast is real, that the problem is going to happen? And then also efficiencies. How do we put together a program and make sure that it is as efficient as it could be? So the desired state that we ended up with was to have not only an obsolescence management program, or not even one that is proactive, but really move forward to being strategic in the obsolescence management plan and to have it documented. And along with that, and I forget who it was that brought up the issue, it's great to have a plan, but if it costs you more than just being reactive, that's not a very good plan. So always keep in mind you have to be driving and moving towards having a truly cost-effective program in place. That requires the need of having it documented, having that process be evolving as you find better ways of doing it, better partners to work with. There's also a need to bring everyone on board, all suppliers, all customers, to really go out and educate them on the true need and the benefit of this. And one of the things that we talked about, or that was discussed, was, you know, it's kind of like doing a business case, kind of the reverse part of it, is sharing the horror stories that have occurred, because there was a lot of discussions about, you know, how do I get funding? How do I get resources? How do I convince my management or the program manager that this is a worthy cause and something that's really going to be beneficial to us? And so when it, you know, when all is said and done, it really comes back to the dollars and cents. And a lot of times people won't move on something, even though it makes logical sense, until they have had, you know, an emotional event that really crystallizes the need to do this. So the thought was to really identify, you know, cases in the past that happened, you know, what was the cost of those, what could have been done to prevent it, and really tie that to the fact that, oh, by the way, we have another case similar to that one that is about to occur. And so really it's bringing in that awareness that, you know, this has happened before, it was very painful, and we're positioning ourselves to have that same pain again. And lastly was to continuously improve and reevaluate everything that you do. Because as I said, to be cost effective, you can't keep doing the same thing as your environment changes. You have to change and improve with the environment that you're working in. So some of the immediate actions that we identified was to put together a team to create this documented process. And an important part of that is to correct previous failures that you've had in the past. There are a lot of people in the workshops yesterday that were fairly new to obsolescence management. There were a lot of people who've been in it for 10 to 15, 20 years. So being able to share that knowledge and share things that have not worked in the past so that you're not repeating history that you had a bad experience with. And continually monitoring your existing parts list was another item that we identified as being one of the immediate things that you can do. As far as long-range planning, it was definitely getting senior management on board. We determined that there are a couple of different levels of funding. There's one at the program level, and then there's one more at the enterprise level. So you can put together a program that addresses each individual program or system or customer. But when you do that, you have a lot of stovepipe that is not the most efficient approach. So the goal is to get this enterprise-wide approach and buy-in from management so that we're not, you know, on program A, you know, selling parts or basically getting rid of parts. That on program B, we're paying through the nose because there's no communication between the programs. So the goal is really to elevate to an enterprise-level program obsolescence management program. And the last thing, and there was a little bit of controversy on this last one about implementing an approved parts list and continually monitoring it. There are a lot of people, and this is probably best practice, that when you get to the point where you have this approved parts list, this becomes the driver for all future designs. So that way you can assure that your engineering team is not designing in obsolescence. You have a way of controlling the proliferation of parts, and as you may or may not know, the more parts you have, the more your overall system cost will be. So having that approved parts list has a lot of value, and I know it may not be something that can be done immediately. That's why we put it down as a goal of being a long-term goal for your program as it matures. And I think that is the last slide that I have.
All right. Good afternoon. My name is Sean Neal, and I manage the global supply chain strategy for Quantum, a leading provider of data center hardware and software. Previous to that, I spent 13 years at Arrow, the last several focused exclusively on obsolescence. So I really enjoy this conference, as a matter of fact. So I'd like to thank the Arrow folks for inviting me back. I will say, Rob, you said you were a coward. I'm not so sure. You made fun of American football in the great state of Texas. There's some gentlemen with cowboy hats, a big silver star on their chest, and boots. They're waiting. They'd like to talk to you at lunch about rugby and all the wonderful things having to do with that. So this group was focused on the external challenges, because we all understand you have problems inside, and then you have these events that take place outside of the four walls of your factory, and how do you best mitigate those problems? And so, you know, the same format as Willie had presented before, and we developed a mission statement. And, you know, look at the key words in there: proactively manage the production life cycle, the platform longevity, you know, avoid unexpected disruptions and expenses, prevent surprises, and really, the most important thing that came through over and over again is begin with the end customer in mind, right? The reason that we have this problem of obsolescence is because someone would like to buy something from us. That's not the worst problem to have, but being unable to deliver or maybe the price changing as a result, that can be somewhat difficult to mitigate with your end customer. The second group had wanted nothing to do with the original mission statement, and so we developed a second one. But really, at the end of the day, it comes down to isolating the customer. There it is again. It's all about the customer. From the EOL, doing it in a responsible fashion financially and trying as much as possible to be proactive and strategic about making sure that your mission is accomplished. I think that that was a great phrase that came out, and there might be a somewhat of an influence on the Mil Aerospace Department in the mission accomplishment thing. So how do you mitigate or eliminate external challenges to your obsolescence strategy? Do it quickly. And, you know, I think you hear this over and over again. It needs to be self-sustaining. A question arose after one of the sessions. How do I account for that? It came up again today. How do you put points on the scoreboard? I think you go tell them, hey, I can't get this part. We're totally ruined. Let the engineering department say, that's going to cost me $50 million to redesign the product. And say, oh, wait, sorry, actually, I do have a solution, and here it is. And so now you can use that $50 million as your benchmark. It has to be cross-functional. We talked about some of the perverse disincentives that we sometimes assign to people that are helping to drive the forecast if there is a last-time buy event. And sales team is worried that a year and a half later, we're going to blame them for excess inventory. All right? How do you make sure that they are comfortable and clearly communicate how many, how long, what is the extended service life? And then this is another theme that's come up quite often in today's talks is, you know, continuous learning. We identified several different ways to do it. IIOM, I happen to be standing next to a gentleman that could help you understand that. FOM is a great example. And the community of FOM, I really encourage you all to keep talking to one another, join the online community, because the best practices at every one of you could be cross-pollinated. And it's always evolving, and it's getting better. And the only way to stay at the cutting edge of that is to, you know, network with the professionals like yourself. We've talked about preaching to the choir or to the converted, right? You're here. You understand how important it is. But the thing I find most interesting, the longer I worked in obsolescence, the further the group of customers expanded, right? Why would anyone want to change a design that works? You never would, right? For you all, a significant portion of you, the cost to recertify, redesign is prohibitive. But understand that there are other, maybe industrial customers that are buying those same products that don't want to, and they are awakening to the need to have a end-of-life mitigation program. And so there will be even fiercer competition for limited resources available in the market over time. So we really tried to align on what are the three biggest challenges externally to your organization to combat obsolescence. Communication, I think we've heard that once or twice, right? But what amazes me is to really manage it properly, the depth of the communication, how wide, how deep you have to go. Someone mentioned yesterday contractual, you know, hey, do you have a contract with every OCM? And another person raised their hand and said, I've got over 1,000 parts on my board. I don't have 1,000 contracts with all of those suppliers. Planning is a very broad topic, but here's the new product. When are we planning on this going obsolete? Having a plan of record, a stake in the ground, and then accumulating funds through the life cycle of that platform to mitigate the inevitable end-of-life issues that you'll face in the future. And resource constraints, right? External. People might look at that as an internal one, but we talked a lot about how, you know, maybe it's not the sexiest thing in the world to graduated and immediately go managing, you know, parts that were introduced before that individual was born, right? We know they're wrong, but other people might not think that they are. But also information resources, right? Redesign resources if you can't handle it yourself. And so all of this goes together, right? And all of it is unique to the context of your company. So what is the desired end state? You know, what is the best practices you can try to get to? Well, is the forecast, the time of the last time buy, sufficient, right? Do people really understand how long that product could last? Is it give you enough time to move to the next alternative that you have? Is the original component manufacturer aligned with that? And by the way, is your customer aligned with what you think as well? They think you'll have that forever. You think it has a 5 to 7 year lifetime. And, you know, what if the parts you buy them and you're going to keep them for 10 years, and what if they don't last that long on the shelf, right? Well, that doesn't seem like the best solution either. And so the analytics, you know, based upon your sustainment contracts and your obligations there, right? I mean, really understanding that and getting that data. Data is one thing, information is another. And IoT, all of those things, we're producing all kinds of data. I love that. We do data storage, if I didn't mention that. Please keep taking pictures of your children. But taking that data and turning it into usable information, what is the failure rate? What is the replacement rate? And what is the cost of a couple more versus not enough? And we've talked about that. How do you account for that? It's very difficult, cost avoidance, right? But you've got to continue to preach. And I bet you can get some of the gentlemen in the front row to come and preach to your executive management team about the cost of not having enough and the customer dissatisfaction and the money that you might spend to make it a viable product. So what should we do immediately? What should we do immediately when we get home? Right after you join the FOM online community, you should, you know, plan obsolescence. Right? Understand that it will happen. There's no elimination of obsolescence. There's mitigation and there's smarter approaches to lessen the impacts. So the NPI engineer, right, does he understand, he or she understand the life cycle of the product that they're designing? One of the gentlemen in the room yesterday talked about how they have actually gone into their ERP system and they have, you know, added a characteristic that will not allow an engineer to design a high-risk part based on life cycle. Oh, good for you. I love that, right? It's institutionalized action, right? Not, oh, I'm good friends with Bob the designer. I'll talk to him. That doesn't work, especially if you retire or Bob gets hit by a bus. How do you institutionalize those things to make sure that they last beyond us? Communication with the original component manufacturer, aligning your product life cycle with their expected product life cycle, and then making sure that you hold them to their promises as best you can. One gentleman said yesterday, the next time they say they're going to end of life it, let's all tell them no. And I said, yeah, that'll never work, but God, it feels good, right? And someone said, we tried that, and then they still did it anyway. You might be able to push it out, and they will work with you. They're not heartless, soulless people, right? They're just people like us, but they have a business to run. So, but getting them to take ownership of it, making sure that they see it, understand that you see it as a competitive advantage to get your component onto my board, I want you to take ownership of the life cycle and make sure that we are on the same page about how long this is going to last. And I'm not going anywhere, and if 4 years from now this goes obsolete, we're going to have a really, really interesting conversation. And then, you know, what are, you know, put hurdles in the way also on accepting orders for older platforms. Boy, salespeople love to sell stuff, right? Regardless if it's still producible, I will let supply chain procurement figure that piece of it out, right? But if something has entered into a stage where there is significant risk associated with the platform, maybe they just can't take an order. Maybe you have to institutionalize some type of check on your obsolescence team to make sure that they can still deliver what your sales guy will sell. And then long-range planning, you know, that end-to-end alignment of the entire supply chain, right? When you talk about we outsource our manufacturing, and then there's components. And by the way, the components, right, the guy needs to get lead frames. He needs to have back-end tests and packaging. You know, it becomes a daunting a view that you must take. And so you have to really isolate those devices and those platforms that are most key to your business and begin there. And then you've got to drill that thing all the way to the ground. And making sure that you have that relationship should drive supplier selection. If they won't share with you, if they care, if they don't want to tell you how long, if they don't want to tell you who they get XYZ from, but you consider that to be very important, that's a piece of the supplier selection. You know, we talk about contract flow down. So there are flow downs, right? Everyone's familiar with the from the military, but I really look at this as setting expectations. Okay, you are going to be my contract manufacturer. As Ed said, you know, they'll pass the PCN along to you. Okay, that's fine if that is the expectation set, right? But if you don't have an expectation set, what do you get? Who knows, right? A box of chocolates, whatever, Forrest Gump. You never know what you're going to get if you, unless you set expectations at the beginning. And that's all part of both supplier selection and component selection. And then the funding and the timing. Unfortunately, a lot of people in the room are unable to procure devices even if they know that they will likely need them because of the structure of their contracts with their end customer. And or they might be able to get the money, but not in time to get the last time buy, right? And how frustrating that must be. And so, you know, going back into the original contract and the original bid process and trying to account for the future needs for obsolescence, a set aside of a percentage of certain monies, right, so that you can immediately tap upon those when needed, understanding you'll do full accounting for your customers, will really help to mitigate a lot of those situations as well. So I'd like to thank everyone for the time in the workshops. To Willie's point, sometimes trying to get people to talk is hard. Yesterday, sometimes trying to get people to stop talking was just as hard, but that's a great thing, and I really appreciate that, and I hope that you all took as much out of it from the workshops as we did.